All right, everybody, welcome to the Rocket X podcast. I am your host, Victor Rancor. Today, I have an industry titan, someone that's been around for a long time. He's worked not only with countless contractors all over the country, but he's helped run and scale some of the largest companies in the industry. He's working with private equity people all the way down to the little guy that's trying to grow and everything in between. He's going to be a wealth of knowledge. Today, we're going to talk about a lot of things that are probably important in your mind, like things that are going on in the economy. Is the world falling? Is everything going to fail? Are we going to go out of business? We're going to talk about things you guys can do to impact your business today to not only stay in business, but to help dominate your market, man. Josh Kelly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, man. It's so weird. And like, this is just a random comment, but like, I was always the young guy, but now I'm finally transitioned. He's been in the industry forever, which is fucking true. I've been in the industry as an entrepreneur and a contractor for over 20 years, but like, I'm part of the old guard, the Dave Geigers, the Pauls, the Tom Boyces, the like, I'm thrown into that group, which rightfully so. I helped them with a lot of their businesses, and that's like where I came from. But it's just weird. It's like, I don't know when I became the old guy in the room, but it's happened.
I just hit 9 years in the trades last week, and I'm like, dude, I'm about to be a decade. Like, I still remember, like, when I first started, the guys, like, I've been doing it for 10 years. I'm like, you're old. And I'm like, you know, I've been able to do a lot of things, but like, I'm feeling it now too. Like, I have some of my partners that are, you know, mid 20, 25, 26 running, you know, $30, $40 million businesses. And I'm like, you know, I feel like the old guy to them. So I definitely get that. But, you know, as you know, like, this industry, you learn something new every day. And I feel like that's one thing that I've always loved about this industry. Like, nothing's the same. It's not going to be the same next year. It won't be the same the year after that.
Oh, for sure.
Always evolving. So, you know, that's the only thing you guys can accumulate with time. Like, I could pound my chest all I wanted a couple years ago, but, you know, to say that I knew everything, it's a fallacy. Nobody can know everything. Nobody's a guru that knows all. And I think the people that are successful, like you or me and the other guys in the industry, is that the people that are students of the game. And when they see something new or they see something going on, they try to figure out how to overcome that or how to improve it or whatever it is. And I think that's what you've done through your career. And, you know, 20 years in, you can't replace that. You can't get a guy off the street that has 20 years of knowledge, because you know what levers to push, what to do in the good, but the good times and in the bad times. So,
oh, for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot of reasons I've been really successful. Some of it's luck, like that's just part of the deal, right? But I credit to really two things, right? So number one, I did my first sales conference. It was under Rick Hutcherson when I was 13 years old. I skipped school for it, right? And I've read a business book or a self-help book a month since I was 13. And the other thing I credit is, like, I've probably visited more shops, I don't know, than anyone, but certainly up there. I'm close to helping and talking to and visiting over 1,000 shops at this point. And when you get that kind of exposure, you see some really creative stuff, and some of it's really good, some of it's really bad. But, you know, that exposure makes you think differently and think out of the box and do a lot of cool stuff, man.
You know what's funny? Actually, I did a TikTok live for the first time this morning, and my buddy's like, yeah, you gotta go live on TikTok. I'm like, all right, I did it. And I started talking, and I'm like, and someone started asking questions, and I'm like, dude, like, the biggest key for me, like, was when I started to go see the other shops, because I don't think it's almost impossible to do something you've never witnessed happen. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you're a success too. I said, dude, I got to work at Service Champions as my first business. Some guys are working with their brother, uncle, cousin, or whatever that hired him to do HVAC. I got to see a different side of business from beginning. And a lot of that is obviously why I'm successful. If I would have started at some random mom and pop shop, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I got to see the inner workings of a large organization, and it allowed me to grow. And I tell people, I was like, you know, half the time when I went out to events, like, I remember I went to my first one, I think it was Service World in 2019. You know, I'm sitting there and there's Ishmael and Ken and Tommy and all these guys. And I'm just a new guy. I was only in business for a year. I mean, my ego was big, but I was still a little guy, right? But I started talking and they invited me out to the shops. That was a big thing that, you know, I got to see the different things and how things to operate in different markets. And yeah, that is, it's super powerful. And I tell guys when they come to my event, don't be the freaking fly on the wall, right? Like, get in there and talk to these guys. These guys are open books. And you know, someone like Wyatt Hempworth, right? Like, he does a shop tour like every day, it seems like.
Yeah, no, that's a big thing. That's an amazing shop, by the way. And just for everybody, that's any hour, but like, legit, they have advantages that I don't think anyone else can repeat, which is probably rough. Like, they haven't fired someone in like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Every single employee starts off a technician. They recruit really a lot from like one mega church because they're based in Utah. Like, I wish I had that shit.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Yeah, that was one of the things I talked to Wyatt. Was like, you know, how do you replicate that in all these markets, right? And yeah, I think that was a lot of the questions. Was like, well, okay, you did it in Utah. That's your bread and butter. Like, what's going to happen to that? And obviously, they've proven to be successful in other markets, right?
Yeah, but not with the same model, though, right? Like, they had a lot of learn, and they're still learning, right? And everybody always is, right? And the truth is, it has not, like, Parker and Sons has advantages that other companies don't do, and We Care and Preferred and Four Seasons and Horizon. We all have different skill sets based off the culture that we built and really the person in charge of the helm, that just because it worked here doesn't mean it's going to work there. You know what I mean? There is no one size fits all in this industry.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of people, they're like, they want you to tell them exactly what works. Like our Pennsylvania branch, we do mostly mini splits and we crush it. You know, we had $4.5 million in EBITDA last year out of that branch, and we don't hardly do any service work. It's almost all estimate to sales to install. And we just got the efficiency side down, and that's how we've been able to dominate that market. But that wouldn't work where in the other markets where I'm at, like, it's completely different. It's like most of our businesses are service to replacement. That one is all replacement, no service, but we figured out a way to make it profitable. And I think that's one thing, is like you come out to one of my trainings and yeah, the stuff I do works, but you have to change it to your business. You have to change it to the market. Like, everybody thinks it's, like you said, one size fits all, and it's just not how it works. And especially, like, we'll talk a little bit about like the Phoenix market, right? Like, you guys have a 9-month shoulder season, right? Like,
seven or eight at least. Yeah, for sure.
That seven or eight, you know, that's a whole different ball game than going to, like, you know, somewhere where it's got two seasons, right? Like my Georgia branch, it gets super cold in the winter. We got super hot summer, sweaty summers, and we have a little bit of a shoulder season, right? And it's a different field. You want to talk about that? Because I mean, I know that there's a lot of guys that are sitting here right now. Their boards are empty. They're, you know, they don't know what to do, because like with all the private equity in the space, right? Dude, they just keep spending money and you can't compete. Like, these little guys can't compete on Google and all these other spades. Like, what would be something that you would say if you're talking to a guy that's, you know, sub $5 million a year? Like, what is something that, you know, what kind of levers can he start pulling right now that would help, you know, impact of the day?
Yo, the thing is, like, and I don't mean to be rude about this, but it's just the truth. They've never been able to compete on Google PPC. Like, the last few years has been an anomaly.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people built that muscle of creating calls, and they got fat and lazy when things were really easy. And now it's not like it's harder than it's ever been. It's back to where it used to be. You know what I mean? So a smaller business has things they could do really well, and they have things that they have no real chance of winning, and don't play in places that you can't win, right? Like a company that, you know, does 3 million or 2 million or 5 million wants to do radio is like, you better pick a small radio station, own it. Don't buy Channel 3 and compete with Verizon that runs commercial every 45 minutes. Like, you're not going to win that battle, right?
Yeah.
So you have to just start, think smaller, like be a bigger fish in the smaller pond. And people forget that small companies actually have a huge advantage over big companies, right? Which is, they can and are willing to do the guerrilla marketing, the one-to-one, the hand-to-hand combat. Parker and Sons can't do that. We have to think in scalable ways, because you got, you know, 150 AC technicians and 80 plumbers. Like, you can't worry about how to get three calls. Like, everything has to be big. So you start shrinking the pool that you're in, and that's where you have a lot of success. The first thing you generally do whenever you're slow is always, always, always attack your customer base, right? There's only three ways to make more revenue, and people only focus on the two, right? They tend to focus on new customers, making more off the customers they have, increasing the average ticket, flipping more leads, all that. But they skip the third one, which is just getting them to use you more often, which is like one of the easiest levers to pull, actually, right? So communicating with your customers, reaching out, text message, emails, ringless voicemail, phone calls. But a lot of companies also do this poorly too, right? Like, where they just like put them in a power bank and they start dialing these people, but they have no information about what would be beneficial. They all do opportunity tagging, like, hey, this guy got pitched air scrubbers twice. We should probably talk about air scrubbers and reinforce that message, right? So you hit your customer base first, and then you start thinking for the new customer side, like, what's something I could own? Don't do something that you can't own. So like, some people, that's a subsidy for Phoenix and Parker and Sons. That's all of Phoenix. Like, we could own radio station, television station. We could bully people. If you're a $3 million business or $1 million business, start with owning the neighborhood you live in. Like, get involved in the HOA, talk to your neighbors, do the door hangers, do the knocking if you're set up for that, right? Do the postcards, geofence, and do direct marketing to them, right? Like, pick an area that you can own and focus on. As you go neighbors, you go to bigger neighborhoods, and you go to subsidies, and you can expand into that. But a lot of people try to dabble, and dabble is a good way to fail.
Well, it's like, you know, Travis Ridge, right? Like, they own, what market were they in when they sold their business? But was it like Paradise? What was the city?
Yeah, they're out on the west side. They're, no, there's not Paradise Valley. I want to say it's Peoria, but I don't remember.
It was some like little substation. Like, they dominated that area. Like, that was, that's where they dominated. And I talk to people a lot. Like, obviously, I use social media for everything, right? And I say, you got to create them, you got to become the market leader, because almost every homeowner, the housewife, they're on those Facebook community groups, the Nextdoor apps. Like, how do you become the market leader in each one of those? And that's one thing that we did really well at Absolute, especially starting out, because I didn't have the money to compete with the big guys. The only way I can get leads was cheap Facebook leads, and I got really good at hustling those leads, and then, you know, guerrilla marketing, right? So like for us, we would go in and I would do knowledge-based videos every month, and I would just talk about things they should focus on, like, hey, by the way, it's October, this is the best time to change your air filter because X, Y, and Z. If you don't feel comfortable changing your air filter, you don't know your size, put your information in here, right? My team will reach out, we'll send you a free air filter because you're in our local community. Then we get on the phone and we're like, hey, when was the last time you had a tune-up done? Oh, wow, we're running a special for 59. So with the 59, we're going to include the filter, we'll come in and take care of it for you, right? So we started dominating our market just by giving out little bits of information every month inside of it. And we get to every community group. And I used to have the employees, I would pay their wives to get in their local groups because they would live in different cities. I'd pay the wives to get in there and they would mine for leads. And if they got me a lead, I'd pay them a $20 gift card every time they got a lead. And so that's kind of like how we did some guerrilla marketing. Like the pizzas, I'm famous for my pizza box flyers. So like my buddy is the one that convinced me to start my business at his pizza shop drinking beers. So like I started the business, I'm like, okay, how can I market? I'm like, hey, can I pay you 200, I think it was like $250 a month to put, and I'll come in, I'll glue them on there, and I'll put a flyer on every single pizza box that went out. And it was like, hey, because you ordered a pizza with Magic Mike's, we're in your local community, here's a free, and we get a free filter or a free tune out. And we go out there, my guys, I call them the pizza box leads, and they fucking loved them because they're like, oh, you like Magic Mike? Oh, Magic Mike grew up with this guy, right? And then also we started the story, and then we were selling all those people, and they were all in a little tiny area because the pizza shop I can deliver 5 miles away, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So little things like that, you got to think outside the box. But so many people are like, let's just dump more money into digital marketing, you know? And it's just dumb. It's the same thing.
Digital marketing is getting harder and harder and harder. But it's always like we've been on Oasis for a while with digital marketing. It's getting back to where it is. But it's going to be, the truth is, PE groups, that's a lever they could pull. And they don't care the same way. They have deeper pockets than everybody else. So that's not going to be a game you could win. So everybody who's like, my solution is to spend more in PPC, I would challenge you to look at your cost per acquisition on PPC and see what it is. Because most of the time, you're spending money to lose money.
Well, I usually take PPC is cool. So like what you do is you get like a stack of cash like this big, right? And you take it and you go like this and you move it over to a trash can, throw it in there, and then you let it fire. That's what PPC is. And that's how I people. Yeah. And it's like, and it's cool. Like people like playing.
Well, you take 10% of that money back.
Yeah.
You put that in a drawer, but 90% of it.
90%
was in the garbage.
Yeah. Like every once in a while, I don't like playing with fire. So, and that's part of the reason why I built the software that we built. Like the RP1 thing is like, how do we compete? And like my business is the same as, you know, most people, we have big shoulder seasons in California. I was like, so for me, like growing my business, obviously we did guerrilla marketing. Then I started buying databases from people. And like we grew that thing to, you know, when I sold it, we had 39,000 people in the database in 4.5 years. And I just kept acquiring customers. And then I would use the software to activate those customers. And we just ran tune-ups all the time. And we just got really good at putting a process in place and a conversion on those things to where it made sense. So many people, like if I gave them 100 tune-ups today, they would actually destroy their business. And I try to talk to my customers. I said, look, before you hire us to do this, I'm going to fill your board, but you're going to run around town unless you have a process dialed in that actually knows how to convert these. Because your guys are going to go, oh, it's another tune-up. Where my guys are like, fuck yeah, it's another tune-up. I'm about to sell some shit, right? And it's a different mindset to running it. And I think like a lot of guys, they bleed themselves out. The more leads they get, the more they bleed because they only know how to convert repair calls and they haven't put a process in place to convert those service calls.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, like you have to put together a scalable process. You have to have a system. You have to drive. You have to hold your team accountable. And there's all kinds of stuff that we could talk about that. But really, the key is like consistency, right? Yeah. Consistency on every single call, making sure they're talking about the same thing, doing the same thing, following the same process. And in truth, like I can't get all my guys to wear shoe covers. So like there's things I accept and things I put my foot down on, right? But what I've learned over the years is like the only way to be really successful in sales and converting on those customers you have is to create a really simplified, really scalable process. Because if you give any complications to techs, to CSRs, to really any of the team, like the odds of it happening every time, it just gets lower and lower with each step you add. At the end of the day, like if you're short on calls, it's expensive to get new customers.
Yeah,
it's semi-expensive to get customers to use you again. It's really cheap to be effective and get the most of the customers that you're already doing business with.
Yeah.
That's the first place you should always, always look when revenue's not there.
And I'll drop an easy commercial, www.rp1.ai. Go ahead and check that out. We can help you out with that. But, you know, I want to talk about something else too. And I'll talk about, you know, how easy it was the last couple of years with, obviously the leads were easy. Everything, it seemed like it was so easy, right? You could keep hiring people. But I think what's happened is that, you know, people got so used to that, that they haven't started running their business like a business. Like when you have expansion, you need the people. You do. But I feel like a lot of people try to hold on to people like they're fucking collecting Pokemon cards, and it's not catch them all, right? Like, you got to fucking release some people, right? And I think you want to talk a little bit about that. Like, I feel like now, because they're trying to keep all these guys busy, they just keep spending more instead of coming to like accepting what's coming in and what's coming to us inside of our budget. And let's make a business that fits in that budget. Because if I go outside my budget, all I'm going to do is, you know, go broke anyways.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a weird dynamic because like, this is a really long time, and I am really kind of part of the old guard, the super high successful guys that been doing this for a long time. I'm not the flash in the pan guy that grew to 50 million in 3 years, right? Which is, by the way, amazing, but that's just not me. I learned a long time ago how to like make the most out of a customer and build a business and build margins, do this stuff, because I didn't have a choice. I mean, like the last few years, it has been easier. And you got to remember, like in our industry, people fucking forget this. But like, if things are going really well and the industry is doing well, people have this imagination that like they've created a business out of thin air, but that's not how it works. There's not more AC units than there were before in a substantial way. Like there's new construction that helps with it, but not, that's not what's really moving the needle. What we're doing is moving people up in the process and getting them to buy earlier, which means there's going to be a pain point to that, right? Yes. Not everyone will focus on that pain point. Not everyone will take that. You could take your unfair share, right? But yeah, you have to build a system. And in so many contractors now, because there was this like rush, it was a gold rush for the industry.
Yeah.
Right? They focused on growth. That was all about fucking revenue. And no one for a long time talked about profit. And revenue is a bullshit metric. You know, I did 50 million. Who fucking cares? You made 200 grand.
Yeah.
Right? It's all about the bottom line and setting your gross margins properly, right? So you're actually sustainable. And then setting your net numbers so not only you can survive, but you can thrive and your team can thrive and you can do things other people can't, right? Well,
the other thing is that I deal with this every day. The first thing, you know, I get to it, and you do training for business owners. First thing I ask them, I said, you know, what's your budget for the year?
Yeah,
I don't have a budget. I'm like, okay.
They don't have goals. They don't have anything, right?
And they're like, well, you know, I'm going to do 10 million. I'm like, do you even know what it would take to do 10 million? Do you know how many calls you need? Do you know how many employees?
How many calls, how many team members, all the basic stuff, right?
And I've been there. You know, obviously I started I was a sales guy, right? Like I knew how to sell the shit out of stuff. And then I sold myself into trouble, right? Like in 2021, I almost went bankrupt because I had sold myself. I had outkicked my coverage. I had sold my way into trouble rather than it didn't help me because I didn't put the system in the process. I didn't know how much cash I was going to need. I wasn't doing a cash flow assessment. I didn't, you know, any of this stuff. It was just like, just sell. Well, I didn't understand how you grow those employees. Everything grows and we didn't associate it. So I had to like take a step back in 2021. I mean, I laid off 50 fucking people and I really had to take a look at the business. I have to learn this stuff. Like, you know, sales is great. Like you need sales, but
oh yeah,
so many other things. So that, and I was on stage the other day and you know, you can have two different companies, like both are 10 million. One's making 25% net and the other one's making freaking 10%. Like what's the difference between that? Well, what's going to be the operation and understanding all the other levers that you have to pool to get to those numbers.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, most contractors, like, it's just the truth. It's not good by any means, but they judge a business, they're successful or not, whether their bank account goes up or not. And the truth is, you could get away with that when you're a $1 million business, because you know everything that's going on, you know all the calls, you know every single customer. You have a decent head around. You can still get yourself in trouble there, but you got $5-10 million business, no matter how successful you think you are, you're a few bad months away from going out of business, right? You need to know your numbers. You need to set your gross margins properly. You need to build yourself up for success and growth. And then people get real bitchy about that stuff. It's like, why is this company so much more expensive? It's because they know what they have to charge to make it real, right? To make it survivable, to make sure that even when everybody else is slow, I'm still growing and having success, right? That takes money and that takes systems, that takes support, that takes operations. It's not as clear cut. And what tends to happen, especially like this time of year, right? Like it goes one of two things. They either go crazy at marketing and all of a sudden they're at a 17% marketing spend and good luck making money,
yep.
Right? Or they start discounting like fucking crazy. And I'm okay with discounting, to be clear, but I have a culture of discounting, but like 5%,
yeah.
Not 25%, and my margins are set at 60%. So now I'm getting 55%. right? I have to stay above 50 on average to be in business.
Listen to what he just said there, right? So many of you guys are pricing yourself at 50 and then you guys are discounting 10, 15% and then you're really fucked. So you have to, there's an old saying, it's called, you look them in the eye, you drop your pants and you watch them buy. You know what I mean? We started at 65 where we said that was a book price and my guys would get a couple extra points if they sold it at that price, right? And we had a built-in draw. So these are built in. We already expect you guys to discount a little bit. And then after that, then we hit into the commission part, like we're going to hit your money. So my guys learned like, hey, we can use these ones, but we don't go below that, right? But some of these guys are pricing themselves at 50. Their guy's discounting 10 and they're still paying them full commission.
Well, yeah, I had a real conversation with a contractor that didn't even know how to calculate gross margin. Like they were screwed up and then they're setting their break. Well, it's supposed to be a 51. So my book price is a 51, right? But if your book price is 51, the only way to get 51 is to never give a discount or never make a mistake or misprice anything or, you know, every install works perfectly, which is just not factual. You know, there's no way around it. So you have to build. In general, my book price is anywhere from 58 to 60% for installs. Service is higher, obviously, because it's less competitive. It's generally 65% for service.
Someone gave me shit for charging $1,000 for a run cap, but I was like, you're just mad you can't get $1,000 for a run cap.
Well, there is a diminishing return, right? There is a real number where, like, at the end of the day, if a price is too high, which it can be too high, you will lose customers, but not for the reason you're thinking. The customers in general don't know and don't care. Yeah. And that sounds weird, but your techs will eventually, it'll become too large a pill for them to swallow. Yeah. And then when the tech thinks it's too high, the customer will think it's too high. So there is a diminishing return. And I'm not saying in California, maybe you can't or shouldn't charge $1,000 for a contactor, but you don't need to have an 80% markup. Like that's unnecessary, right? But if you're at 65%, you've protected the business on service. But I know people go all the way 70, 75%. I know people go down to 60%. There is a range that's unacceptable based off your service.
Well, I can also tell you
customers you have, what kind of marketing you do to get those customers, all that stuff, you know?
Well, there's a secret. You can't spend margin either. So sometimes you only spend cash. So sometimes you got to really figure out where that, you know, some people are like, I'm holding my margin here. And then they don't sell anything for a fucking month. And I'm like, dude, like you got to fucking make
money. Yeah, the old saying is you don't put margin in the back. So like, and the truth is like when it's super slow, I discount more because I need to, right? And it is what it is. But my discounts end up like the worst is going to be is 44-45%, like because I'm taught them how to do it properly. I teach them to break it down to ridiculous. We're not talking about a $25,000 system. We're talking about $3.60 a day. Like there's a lot of techniques and systems that's to it, right? Yeah, I know contractors who take installs at 30% and have no fucking idea that means they're probably losing money.
Yeah. And that's it. I just got off and one of my clients and we run a bookkeeping company and I went through his books and he said 30% gross profit. I'm like, bro, like what is going on? And he's a tiny company and, you know, obviously he can pivot pretty quick. And I came down, he wasn't job costing. He actually did the crazy, like one thing I find out pretty crazy is that most people don't even know what their overhead is. So they don't even know what it costs to run their business every day. So that's usually one of the first levers I try to teach them. Like, hey, we got to figure out what it costs you to run it every day to figure out what it's going to take you to break even. Cause some of these guys, they don't realize what their overhead is and they go do these jobs. They're like, oh, I'm doing $10,000 a job today. Well, your gross profit's $5,000 and your daily overhead $6,500. So you made $5,000 in gross profit, but you cost you $6,000 to run the day. So now you've lost money. And if you don't know that stuff and you're just shooting blind and then you end up at the end of the month and then half of these guys, they don't even get their P&Ls till like 2 months later. The game's already over and you've already lost two games.
You're two months behind on decision. And in truth, like the P&L is not, you should be doing job costing consistently, right? But beyond that, you should be doing a DP report, checking your daily revenue versus growth. Like I explain this all the time is like, most people run their business like you would never. I think sports analogies is one of the most obvious, simplest ones, right? If you were playing a basketball game and you were going to coach professional or college or even a high school team, right? Imagine how this would work, right? We're going to go ahead and play this team and we're going to have a piece of paper and we're going to write 1, 2, or 3 every time we score, but we're not going to add it up until the end of the game. How would that fucking work? Not great.
Yeah, you can't make a pivot when the game's already over. And, you know, once it says final score, you can't adjust it. And then, you know, if you go 2 months in a row without making adjustments, you lost money 2 months in a row, what are you going to do?
Well, you can't go 3 days without making adjustments. And the general rule with me and my teams is like, anything that happened once, like that's an anomaly. I can't control that, right? Anything that happened twice, right? Because that's still unusual in a, like a weird situation. The third time, it can never happen a third time though, because the second time I've made an adjustment, this is a repeat problem, right? So 2 days into the month, like if I'm behind goal on the second day of the month, I'm making an adjustment on the third, right?
You know, the number one, the one of the biggest issues, like obviously you run these big companies, dude, is finding finding a general manager, finding someone to run these businesses is almost like it's a fucking needle in a haystack, right? And the reason is because we have to make so many decisions in such a little bit of time. And you're talking about before we came on here about, you know, me missing running my business because you missed the chaos. You missed the decision-making. Like, I almost like to walk in like a guy that's going to, you know, on detonate a bomb, right? Everybody else is fucking freaking out and, you know, get to the point where you're like, oh, I can fix it in seconds. And that's the kind of like chaos. I almost miss that stuff. I miss the decision-making more than I miss anything because it just makes you just like, dude, like, yeah, but why is this so hard for you guys?
Like, well, transparency, like, that's not a good thing. Like, not only, like, I get why that, like, builds your ego and that's jam, because that's like, you're the fucking solution maker.
Yeah.
And build the shit. But that's probably because you didn't have a real clear playbook. Like, you got to have a playbook. If this, then one of these five options, which one are we pulling, right? That's how you create a sustainable business. And, like, it is really difficult to get a GM. But that's the reason it's really difficult to find a great GM is because everyone's trying to fucking find one instead of build one.
Yeah.
Right? You have to be able to build a really solid manager. You have to be able to build a really solid GM because there's only a few of us, and it's a real thing. I mean, maybe dozens of home service companies across the United States that actually build great leaders because that's what they focus on. That's what I focus on, right? That's my number one role is to build leadership teams, right? But most people don't think like that. They think like they're the solution finder, and that works up to a certain point, but good luck doing that with a $50 million or $100 million business, right? Like, they have to make decisions without you being involved. Otherwise, your life is going to be fucking miserable.
Yeah. And that's, well, one of the things like we switched before, it was like someone would come to me with a problem. They weren't allowed to come to me with a problem without having a solution. So like I would always come, you know, that's one of the things we started implementing is like, hey, we come to me with an issue. Let's give me a couple different options for solutions that we can start figuring this out.
Yep.
And it did free me up. And I think that's what, you know, that was part of the thing too. When I did finally sell the business, like I wasn't really there, right? Like I wasn't there anymore. And it was kind of like, it was almost boring to me because it wasn't as exciting. If that makes sense. Well, I thrive in chaos and everybody else gives me shit. Cause I'm like, even when there's no chaos, like I'll find a way to cause it. That's a me thing. That's my own issue that I have to deal with. That's what I pay the therapist for. So try to figure that stuff out. But
well, I think most people are that way though. Like, cause they enjoy it. Cause they feel like they're really solving problems. Right. But at the end of the day, a business is not meant to make you feel good. It's meant to make you and your team members money and take care of your customers. Right. Like, and that's a mind shift change. Right. And like, to your point, like I am someone who in general thrives in chaos. Cause I like killing chaos. Like, I like making businesses predictable and stress-free and remove the uncertainty from them. Right. But as soon as I get a handle of that, I just jump into a new business. Right. So I'm like constantly adding things to an unhealthy level, right? And that's my problem. It's kind of the same thing as here, but like I do that by stepping into new things, not like by creating chaos and existing shit.
It's like you can work your way out of a position, right? And I talk about this all the time. Like you want to work your way out of your job. And if you can do that, then you can move on to the next thing, right? Like people ask me, like, how do you do so much stuff? I'm like, I really don't do any. I put down place that do everything for me, but like, do you think I'm running all these different businesses? I'm like, no, like I'm barely involved. I get my reports, my email, I read the reports, and if something's like really off, I'm like, hey, what the hell is going on? But like, I don't have to do it. Like, I'm not in the day to day. I'm hanging out in my house. I was joking earlier. One of my old partners, he's like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, I rolled out of bed at like 8. I just went to the gym. I met somebody. We had some cup of coffee and hung out, and like now I'm gonna go do some podcasts. And I'm like, but I'm also at the same time running businesses, right? So it's because you put the people in place, and when things go. Like my phone doesn't ring anymore, which I do miss that. Like I thought I had friends, but it was just people that needed something all the time. I found out that your friends are go as far as it as long as they'll be your friends as long as you keep signing their check. And then after that, they're like, you know, I really didn't like that dick. But
that is a real fucking shitty part about being successful. And then that's a real, and this is totally off topic, right? But like, it's not that I'd had more friends. I knew what the fuck was going on, right? But like at the end of the day, people bug me most of the time because I know they need something. And you get jaded at shit. Like when someone compliments me, I have this terrible habit now and I'm getting better at it. But when someone compliments me, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop every fucking time. Awesome. What do you need?
Now that's actually the case. And I was talking to Michelle the other day and she's like, cause she hasn't played the politics. I was like, you know, we're in the business of being politicians. Like it's just part of the deal. You have to play the game as much as we don't like it. She's like, well, you're really good at it. I was like, well, I'll just do it and you don't have to worry about it. But like, it is part of the deal. Like you don't become successful by being a dick. So you have to give as much as you take. But yeah, like I feel like more than ever now, it's like if my phone rings, it's 100% somebody needs something from me. I don't even go out of my maybe I'm a shitty friend because I'm just like, dude, like I just, but every time I go do something, like I go out, they want me to pay for the drinks. They go out, like it just always ends up being like, this isn't fun for me. I'd rather hang out at home and be with my kids. kids that hang out with you guys.
As weird as it sounds, you just need to shift up your friend group. There's people that wouldn't do that, but they generally are going to be successful, driven business owners too, because they understand what you're going through in the process, which is fucking hard to do, but you know, it is what it is.
Oh yeah. You got to top grade your own friends. So,
well, you know, Josh,
we covered a lot of stuff on this podcast, and I think like I'm enjoying this. Like I could just hang out and talk to you for hours just because we get each other. Right. And I think, you know, that is what you just said is important. Right? If you guys are listening to this, right, you do have to level up your friends. Like I still hang out with my retarded high school friends every once in a while, but that's not who I hang out with on the regular, right? You want to get around people that are successful, someone like Josh or myself, or, you know, I'd go put myself in rooms with, you know, Tommy and all these other guys. And the reason I did that wasn't because that's what I wanted. Like, it wasn't just like out of no reason. Like I was saying, I was looking for something. I was trying to level up. I was trying to get around better people and smarter than me, because you don't want to be the smartest one in the room. And the way you do that is by, you know, coming to events and going to the places where these people are, right? And Josh is going to be one of the speakers at Rocket X, you know, May 1st through 3rd in Dallas. And if you're a contractor right now, especially a small guy, you need to get around big people more than you think. Like you're the one that needs to buy the ticket more than the big guy that's already running a big business needs to buy a ticket. The little guy, if you're the little guy and you're trying to figure out how to win, how do I grow? How do I do this? The people that are there, if you look at the lineup top to bottom, have grown some massive companies, massive businesses in your same industry. And I got guys in roofing, I got guys in, you know, garage doors, I got guys in HVAC, electrical, anything that you're in, there's someone there that's done what you want to do. You got to get there and rub shoulders. And I always say, when you come to an event, don't be a fly on the wall. Go up and talk to that person. You paid the price of admission gets you the ability to go talk to the people you want to talk to. And you hear me and Josh and you hear these guys talking, dude, I enjoy helping people. Josh enjoys helping people. Like,
oh, for sure.
You come up to him, he's an open book. If you give him an idea, he'll tell you you're an idiot, or maybe he's like, hey, that's a great idea, you should do that, right? But you have to get around people that are successful to become successful. You have to see how they act, how they interact with people. The people that I see at the events that are successful and they've run these big businesses, dude, they talk to everybody. Like, that's just how they get the knowledge. Because like, even like you, Josh, you'll probably go to the event, you might hear something from one of these guys, you're like,
oh, for sure. I do all the time, man. I can learn from anybody.
It's Robin Duplicate, maybe R&D. And that's how I do business. Like I didn't learn all this shit in a short period of time by like being quiet and not asking questions. I only ask questions because I tell people all the time, once it's in your brain, it belongs to you. It's not theirs anymore. And someone's like, well, I said that.
You gotta give credit. Yeah, you gotta give credit.
Really cool, but like at the end of the day,
I've seen you steal shit from me 15 minutes afterwards to take credit, Victor. What the hell?
Whatever. It's what it is.
It's a liar.
At the end of the day, it's a revolver effect. Like, how fast can you actually take information and then make it your own? And like, how did that become
sure. Honestly, like, I think that's the best compliment. Number one, like, I'm giving you shit, but like, I think it's good. And number two, like, to really be successful at shit, if you're going to an event, which you should come to RocketX, and I am speaking, come check out my breakout for sure. It will be the best one, but not the point. Two things you need to do, right? Number one, the speakers are amazing. You're going to learn a lot from them, but I think you always learn more at the bar talking to contractors because the speaking is polished and well done. But come talk to me at the bar and just ask a fucking shit ton of questions. Number two, the people who do well at these events are the ones who immediately fucking implement. I'm teasing Victor, but like when he started like talking like it was a great idea, literally 15, 20 minutes later, like that's because he's fucking committing in his mind to remembering it and to doing it. That is a good thing.
Everyone's like, how do you think? And I went from nothing to where I'm at now because I put myself in those rooms. Like I was in the room at Server Shed. We had some really good sales guys, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
If I heard something, dude, within seconds, that's mine. Like I didn't take time to like to do it. I would make it my own as quickly as I could. But like, dude, no one's reinventing the fucking wheel. It's just not happening. Like, you know, even if they think they are, they're really not.
I mean, there are some new creative things out there, but it's 1%. And by the way, it's not the thing that makes you super successful. The super successful stuff is the basic stuff.
Yeah, it's the fundamentals, right? It's like if you learn the fundamentals and everything else is good. But like, I don't know, man. I just think that the faster you can implement stuff, the faster you can get where you want to go. And the reason I put these events specifically at the end of the week. So we do Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You fly home Saturday. Sunday, you think about what you're going to implement. By Monday, you need to implement that shit. I think that's one of the big things for me. That's why I do at the end of the week. Because I'm like, I want you to go home, really think about it over the weekend and get your ass to fucking work on Monday. Don't pay for the $1,000 to get in the fucking room and then not implement the stuff you hit. And then guess what? When you do implement it, continue it. So a lot of guys will start for that first month and they fucking knock it out of the park. And then the mundane happens and they stop and they just stop putting, they don't put the process in place. They don't monitor anymore. And then they have to go get another fucking shot of heroin from another training class, another shot of heroin. And then they get addicted to it, right? Instead of just actually fixing the problem.
Well, you know, what's crazy is like, if you're to ask people why they stop doing stuff, like some people will be really honest about it. It's like, well, because that problem stopped being a problem. So we stopped doing it. It's like, well, it wasn't a fucking problem because the solution you were doing was working. So like, just fucking keep doing it and it will continue to not be a problem. You stop doing it. and all of a sudden you have this problem again. You're like, oh, what happened? Now we got to come up with a new idea. It's like, no, just go back to doing the thing that already was working.
Heck yeah. Well, Josh, man, it's been a pleasure. It's always a good time talking to you. I'm excited to see you in May. If you guys haven't got your tickets yet, go to www.callprofitrocket.com. Sign up for RocketX. It's May 1st through 3rd. We got some great speakers. We got great lineups. I got Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott will be there. I got Rick Ross performing. I got Tommy Mello, Josh Kelly, Lance Bachman, a bunch of industry experts. Come check it out. You guys will really enjoy it. And then the goal, the reason I put it in May is because I want you to implement that shit, because the number one time to make money or lose money is summer. We're going to right now, this is where you can make the most amount of money, and I want to make sure you hold on to it as well. So thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Josh, thanks again for coming on, brother.
No worries. Appreciate you, bud.